I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
This episode of The Dirty Inning contains information from the Sabre Bio Project's entry on Bill Kilifer, written exhaustively by Charlie Weatherby. It also contains information from the April 26, 1912 edition of The True Northerner, the July 1, 1914 edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the December 12, 1913 edition of the Arkansas Democrat, the September 24, 1915 edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the October 5, 1917 edition of The True Northerner, the December 10, 1917 edition of the Evening Public Ledger, the August 12, 1921 edition of the El Paso Herald, and the August 2, 1933 Altoona Tribune. I did it. I did it without sounding evil. Welcome to The Dirty Inning, a Phillies podcast where we talk about the most obscure, most ridiculous, and most forgotten innings in Phillies history. I'm Justin Clue, the A Phillies writer for The Good Fight. And with me is Baseball Prospectus's own Dr. Trevor Strunk. Hello, Dr. Strunk.
Hi, Santa.
Happy holidays to you from me, Santa
Thanks.
Claus.
Happy holidays to you. I know that you don't celebrate Christmas because you are a druid, so you will be celebrating the solstice.
Yes, I will be celebrating the solstice in typical druidic fashion.
Now, can you explain what that is?
Which, as we both know, and if you wouldn't mind saying this along with me,
so that we both know.
So if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, it involves, we'll do it on three.
One, two, three.
Right as always, Justin, right as always.
Naked in the woods. This is that's actually the first time I did the Santa laugh without sounding evil. I rarely am able to pull that off. And I did that because this is our infamous holiday episode of The Dirty Inning. We did a great one last year. I do not remember what it entailed, but it was phenomenal.
I do remember it being good.
In the same vein as our Thanksgiving episode when we talked about two players named Turkey, a player named Stuffy, and a player named Pie,
and the
way their paths traversed through Philadelphia during their careers. We'll be doing the same thing tonight. We'll be focusing on one man. Trevor, I would feel foolish if I didn't at least mention that today, the 20th of December, the peak Christmas season, holiday celebrations going on across the city. Everyone's just all worked up, like everyone's getting their work done so that they can rush home for whatever holiday plans they have. Manny Machado's holiday plans were stopping by Citizens Bank Park to visit with the Phillies, and being a Phillies podcast, we kind of have to talk about how Manny Machado came by today on the last stop of his free agency tour that started in Chicago with the White Sox, then went to New York with the Yankees, and came here to Philadelphia. Yeah,
that's
one
of those things where you're like, oh, we're the last one. Well, I know it's a quirk of scheduling and all, but that's not good.
You know, I was thinking we learned exactly nothing more new, but we did talk about this all day, which is remarkable. Though I will say, as far as new information goes, we did learn that a construction worker yelled at him on his way into the building, but it was positive. It was all very positive stuff. We yelled at him. What did he say? Do the right thing. Get the money. Yeah. Get that money. Philadelphia's Electricians Union coming through again with another free agent, just like they did with Jim Thome.
SEIU local.
I didn't read anything about what happened in New York, other than that it was a 90-minute meeting with the Yankees, whereas with the Phillies, it was about 4.5 hours, and then they went out to dinner.
Someone said it was Joan Steinbrenner's funeral that day, which is why it was so short.
Oh, my God. Oh my God. Well, I'm just saying, and this is probably because we're obviously more plugged into the comings and goings of Philadelphia, but it just seemed like Philadelphia's visit appeared to have a lot more personality.
Yeah.
You learned a lot more about Philadelphia in the 2 seconds it took him to walk from the car to the door of Citizens Bank Park, which was locked, by the way, when he pulled on it. With Matt Klentak like waiting behind the glass to shake his hand, but the door was locked. Just brilliant. Just I love it.
I wonder, obviously it works for them, okay, because they get good free agents, but like I feel like the Yankees' whole pitch is basically like, you too could be a Yankee.
Do you want to be on the Yankees or not? You know what that means.
They did that whole thing of like photoshopping his face into a Yankees uniform. Sure. And like, it's like, okay, that's a pitch. Mm-hmm. For sure. I agree. But I don't know. Like, I feel like with some players that probably wouldn't work. With some, I mean, it does. But it's good that the Phillies have a different one where like, it's not just that. It's also this, like, you know, welcome to Philadelphia. Like, this is a really great city, and I'm going to, you know, convince you that it's a great city and that you want to live here and that you want to spend your life here. Like, it's, I don't know. That's kind of cool. Like, it's neat being part of a team that isn't just like, remember us, we're the cool team and you want to be on it. It's like, it's also a city.
When you're in your mid-20s to early 30s, or all of your 30s, I guess, we'll see how long the deal winds up being. The Yankees, apparently, it was said tonight by someone from the Yes Network, that the Yankees reportedly don't want to go longer than 8 years, and even that would be a stretch for them, whereas the Phillies seem ready to, if not excited to, offer more years than that.
It seems like an odd thing to, like, a premier free agent be like, I'm not going to offer 8 years. But, like, you know, knowing that there are opt-outs, like, being handed out like candy now, people want them, people will take them. Like, I've not seen an opt-out deal work out badly for the team.
Very true.
They're extraordinarily team friendly. I don't know why free agents like them so much. I guess it's to get out of their thing, but like it has never worked out.
And I know people talk about this, but I guess like we do most of the time when other people are talking, you just sort of nod and let your eyes glaze over.
Yeah, you don't listen. Really,
in this case, I'm more now thinking about, an 8 to 10 year contract and what that really means. Like you're obviously, it's exciting because you're paying to get Manny Machado. You're paying to get pretty much the rest of his productivity for the rest of his career. But you're also paying for like that end of his career where he is not good anymore. And I think in some people's heads, including my own, when you say decline, you think like, yeah, and he won't be as good, and then he won't be as good, and then he won't be as good, and then he'll be bad. And when you start at such a high peak of talent, then even the decline won't be, you know, as bad. That's not always how it works in baseball. Sometimes you just come out the next day holding the bat by the wrong end, can't remember which end to hold it by anymore, and whoops, now you suck, and you have a .211 batting average, and you're 35 years old, and what happened?
We've just watched this happen with a lot of people. Like this happened with Albert Pujols to a degree. Carlos Gomez can't stick on a team, and remember, he used to be like an MVP candidate.
Josh Hamilton?
That was the next one I was going to say. Josh Hamilton is a good example, a depressing example. there are a ton of people like that, and they just remember CJ Edwards. CJ Wilson. I forgot his name.
The pitcher. Yeah. Different guy, him? Yeah.
He got like a huge deal from the Angels and then forgot how to pitch.
What about that's what I was going to say, the Angels. Well, that was CJ Wilson. He went from the Rangers to the Angels. I'm thinking about the same guy. I feel like yes, there was somebody else. I'm not going to remember him anyway. But in any case, I think Manny Machado will be a great, regardless of everything we're saying, a great Christmas gift to the city of Philadelphia. Kind of takes you back, Trev, to all those other years, those two or three other years when we were courting giant big-name free agents around this time of year. And when you think about the Phillies and you think about Christmas and you think about like what goes on with this team around late December, obviously the first one that comes to mind, maybe you think of Cliffmas. Maybe you think of when the Phillies snuck in there as a mystery team and stole Cliff Lee from the Yankees and left money on the table and he came here. And we were all so excited. fresh off of getting eliminated heartbreakingly by the Giants in 2010, maybe you're thinking about another magical time when, you know, the Phillies traded Kevin Millwood to the Braves to clear a roster space and acquired Johnny Estrada.
Memories.
You know, maybe that's your go-to memory. Trevor, maybe you're even thinking of the man who in Baseball Reference's database is only listed as Holiday. Just the word Holiday. No first name. He bats unknown. He throws unknown. No other biographical information other than that he played in 27 games in 1913 for a team called the Waycross Blowhards, who were managed by three different men named Jack Hawkins, Charles Wahoo, and Wild Bill Clark. They also featured a man named Rags Faircloth, who was 20 years old, and, you know, with information being, and Eustace McManus. The information being limited for this era, a lot of the names on the roster are just single names followed by question marks, like Clancy.
Why aren't we doing a serial style podcast? We would be famous. Like, what?
Who were the Waycross Blowhards? A Dirty Inning special investigation. So you can think of that mystery man as well, who is just Holiday.
Will be now.
He was a staple of the Empire State League for 96 at bats in 1913. But instead of any of those stupid things, we will instead be focusing on Bill Kilifer, the man known as Reindeer Bill.
Hey, can I give you someone I found?
Absolutely.
I don't want to cut you off, but I found a guy named Douglas Elf.
Oh, that's a brilliant one as well. Yeah, we'll put that in our pocket for next year.
Well, you don't really want to put him in your pocket because he's so little and gets squished. No, he only played one season in the A-ball for the Twins, hitting a blistering 367, OBP of 387, and a slug of 400. He was a second baseman, and he didn't do anything of note.
I think I speak for all of our listeners when I say that's exactly the kind of person I want a 12-part miniseries on. Each episode, an hour and change.
he had 15 fielding chances and had two errors.
Yeah, this is the guy who's begging for an in-depth biography. Two errors? Yeah. Who does that? That's insane. I've already forgotten his first name. What is it again?
Probably Carlos.
Sure. Well, we'll talk about Carlos Elf next year. This year, we're focusing on Reindeer Bill, a catcher from the town of Paw Paw, Michigan. That's right, a town called Paw Paw that every time I look at, I think of, you know, pew, 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 pew.
You don't think of your Paw Paw?
Well, being the holidays, yes, I suppose that's a closer estimation. Yeah, but let's start, Trev, with some general reindeer facts. Just so you can get aware of why this might be a name attributed to a baseball player. Trevor, did you know that Europe had a reindeer age? It was just a time when that is actually referenced on the timeline of European history. The reindeer age.
Trevor,
it was 16,000 years ago when they were the dominant life form, apparently. The buffalo of Northern Europe.
Huh. That's a shame that everything went wrong for them.
Yes. I don't know if they suffered from the same problem of overhunting or, obnoxious Americans coming in and screaming and hollering and shooting them and leaving their carcasses. But
definitely a bunch of Americans around 16,000 years ago. So I would think probably.
I said I didn't know. All right. Do not do this to me again.
I wonder what happened to them. Probably just a climate change.
I'm sure it was a very normal thing that happened in nature.
Definitely not time-traveling Americans named Justin and Trevor.
Reindeer are also the only horned animal in which the male and females both have antlers, Trev.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
It's about time.
That's all I have to say about that. They also use their powerful sense of smell to feast on subarctic lichen. And in Finland and Scandinavia, only natives can act as, only natives can perform reindeer husbandry. Like they're the only ones who can
marry reindeer.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. Right. Yes. Which, because they care so much, I guess, about the particular way reindeer are handled, that they believe they are the only ones who can handle them, which is interesting and probably true. But Trev, more specifically to what we're going to talk about here tonight, do you know a 20-pound reindeer calf can outrun a human man?
Huh. Well, I'm not surprised they can outrun me. But
well, I'm not surprised they can outrun me either. That's very true. Yeah. But like a calf, a reindeer, an adult reindeer can run anywhere from 37 to 50 miles an hour, according to the unverified website from which I received this information.
Goodness. That's really fast.
But 50 miles an hour? That's not as fast as a cheetah, but extremely fast for just a living thing, right? I mean, I guess like... I guess if you can get into an open field and really get up that momentum, that the chances of hitting 50 miles an hour go way up. Also, if you're going to be able to take flight, then you gotta be able to hit a ground speed that's going to be able to get you off.
No, hang on, land. Flying reindeer. What's all this about?
Oh, Trevor, have you not heard of the flying reindeer?
No.
No. Explain yourself. I am a scientist. Now, in this case, the reindeer, I mean, we bring up the reindeer speed because I wasn't aware that reindeer were particularly known for their speed. But that is indeed why the young ball player Bill Kilifer got the name Reindeer Bill early in his career because he was
back when people knew that reindeers were fast.
Back when, you know, American baseball players were solely naming fast players after horned mammals that lived in the wild. I don't know if you remember, Trev, I believe our first episode ever of The Dirty Inning was about a man whose nickname was the Wild Elk of the Osage.
I so do. How would I ever forget the Wild Elk of the Osage, Justin?
Aren't there, when you think of fast animals, did they just run out of fast animals?
There were like six animals back then.
They didn't seem like, yeah, that's true. There were like two on the North American continent, so they had already burned through those and then
made their dogs way and elk.
Dogs, elk, that's it. Let's move on to Northern Europe. It.
They were all vegans at that point. Either elk steak or salad for dinner.
Well, Bill was known for a couple of things. One thing he was known for was signing with the Federal League, which, Trevor, I don't know if you remember this because it was, you know, decades before you were alive, but this was the third league that sprouted up that was focused on players' rights, that was started by players. And if you were a player and you played for a national or American League team and you signed with a Federal League team, it was seen as basically an act of betrayal. Really? And Bill Kilifer, because they were offering so much more money, trying to give you what you were actually worth. Whereas, in Bill's case, he was being paid, I believe, something around $2,500 by his team, the St. Louis Browns at the time. And when he signed with the Chicago Whales of the Federal League, they were offering him a $17,500 3-year deal. Wow. Versus $3,200 deal with the Browns. And he wound up after that getting a $19,000, $500 deal over 3 years with the Phillies. So that's how he came to Philadelphia. But he was known for that. And so wrong was
he paid for the Phillies? $1,900?
Just shy of $20,000.
Oh, shy of $20,000. So why were the Phillies paying so much?
I guess they just wanted him more than the Browns were willing to pay. I guess he was a catcher and he was considered the best catcher in baseball at that point, even though he was a very weak hitting catcher, but the Phillies acquired him. And actually because of that, he became, this is what the second thing he's widely known for is being the battery mate and best friend of Grover Cleveland Alexander. And they played together. They only played together 250 times, which seemed like a lot. But then I looked back and was like, oh, that's not a ton. But then again, you know, he's only pitching. He's not pitching every day.
Yeah, 250 so obviously, starts is a decent amount of starts.
Yeah. And Alexander would always refer to him as, you know, the guy who knew him the best. They knew how to play together. They got along well off the field. And they just, as a team, as teammates, they clicked.
The going rumor is that they swapped wives.
He said, well, George Grover Cleveland Alexander said of him, quote, he understood me and knew how to handle my peculiarities, which, you know, yeah, every pitcher has them. So if you find a catcher, if you have a catcher who knows you as well as Bill Kelleher knew Grover Cleveland Alexander, then you gotta, you know, you gotta run with that.
A spicy episode.
So,
You know, one of the things that I find really fascinating about the Whales, I don't know if you know this, Justin, but Wrigley Field was built for the Whales. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not. Please continue.
Well, so the Federal League folded in 1905, I think. And that's when Wrigley was built in like 04 or 05. And I forget if it was 1 year or two that they were there, but the Cubs basically moved right in after MLB essentially bankrupted the Federal League. It's really very unfair.
The Whales, it was brutal.
The Whales did like a lot of really good work making Wrigley, and then the Cubs were like, oh, hey, we won. Let me take this thing.
Yoink.
Oh, hey.
I actually learned a lot about the Federal League researching a story on Old Oriole Park in Baltimore. I recently did a story for the Hardball Times on a brewery called Peabody Heights in Baltimore that's built on the grounds of Old Oriole Park and across the street from another version of Old Oriole Park. And the first occupant of the stadium before the Orioles played there was a Federal League team.
Oh, interesting.
The Baltimore Federal League team, which I actually can't remember. So what I'm saying is I knew all that already. I know everything. I know all the information. I have it all in my brain. It's a giant pulsating brain, and I don't need you cutting in like that, Trevor. So thank you.
No, you're welcome.
In any case.
Hey, speaking of knowing everything, apparently, this is funny. My wife recently started working with someone, a very nice woman, whose husband listens to the podcast and likes it very much.
Awful. Oh, just awful. That's terrible. Terrible news.
I'm shouting
him. There's a family.
I'm shouting him out.
The family.
He's a great guy. Apparently, I'd like to meet him soon. But yeah, he likes our podcast.
A family that is unraveling at such a rapid pace that one of them has turned to this podcast for his emotional recourse. That's really right around the holidays, Trev. Couldn't have been worse news. Terrible.
It's true. Listening to the Dirty Inning is a warning sign for many things, including mesothelioma, the onset of Crohn's, chronic Lyme disease, the use of
weirdly enough, yeah, it's a cornucopia of red flags over here. But yeah, no, that was there was certainly a lot of red flags, Trevor, when Bill Kelleher came to the Phillies. In 1912. Yeah, he was a new member of the Phillies. And Trev, you know, when the Phillies acquire a new key player, and, you know, Bill was one of the best catchers, or was going to become one of the best catchers in baseball. In 1911, he played for the Browns in 1909 and 1910, at the ages of 21 and 22 years old. He didn't hit very well. He never hit very well. He's a very weak hitting catcher. But again, this was an age where numbers in general were lower. And again, he handled his staff so well that numbers in general were just, we didn't have a lot of the high ones yet. It was just a lot of twos and threes out there and never in the order you wanted.
We made do.
But we built this country regardless. Regardless, he spent 1909 and 1910 with the Browns playing in not that many games. In 1911, he came to the Phillies and he managed to play in 6 games at the age of 23. And then it was in 1912 that he got into 85 games and his career really took off. So 1912, January 22nd, before the season started, Bill actually, you know, he said the Phillies were going to be a good team. According to the headline in the paper, you know, AP story, Bill Kelleher says Phils to become fighting ball club. And Trev, when the Phillies acquire a new key player, what's the first thing you want to hear him say? It's just they come in and go, you know, well, I think if you're a genuinely good team, you're going to say, I think, you know, I'm happy to be here. I think we're going to like do some damage. I think this is, I love this group of guys. I love this franchise. I've always respected this team. If you're going to be a bad team, you hear this phrase a lot, which I love. I think we're going to surprise some people.
that's the best. It's just the best. You know what? To me, I would like to see, yeah, you know, I want to see someone say something like, yeah, you know, I just want to be respectful of everyone and not give people bulletin board material.
Which is what qualifies as bulletin board material in this case.
Yeah, saying that the team is going to be good. It's not acceptable.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, you want someone to come in and be like, I have a really realistic approach to all of this.
Yeah.
I'm here because this is the place that offered the most money. I'm not wild about the schools, but I'm not really wild about my kids. So that came to a push.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think so many times we keep hearing these people who like, you know, they just want to say that the team's going to be good or something. Like, remember when Jimmy Rollins said, it's just gauche. Say instead, the team will play baseball.
You know, I got to tell you, I disagree with that because
what?
Jimmy Rollins giving quotes in the preseason like that was the most energizing thing he could have done for the fans.
You do realize I'm joking, right?
I'm just saying I disagree with your joke. I disagree with humor as a concept, and I think this is something that needs to be taken. I think humor needs to be taken more seriously. I think we need to take humor as seriously as the Yankees took banning night games, which they also did in 1912 in an article that appeared next to the article I'm referencing about Bill Kilfer saying the Phillies are going to become a fighting ball club. Trevor, the only thing
– good job reading the whole sports section from 1912.
The only thing that the Phillies were missing at this point,
old newspaper, as
Bill told us, was there's nothing wrong with the Phillies that some running and psychology can't correct. So that was, they were just, you know,
they were just
some
cuckoo.
Faster speeds and a couple of, you know, fixed minds away from being a championship
team. Just need some shrink.
He said there will be plenty of running for everyone in camp, especially the pitchers. I'll guarantee the pitchers will be in shape when they return to Philadelphia. I'm a believer in conditioning of legs as well as arms, and that applies to the whole team.
That's so weird.
Was this a point in history where people were like, working out just one part of their body their entire lives.
Doctors were convinced that you could only pick one. Yeah. You're a jumper. You want legs.
Oh, legs. Yeah, you're going to be a leg man. If I see you lifting any weights with your arms, that's over for you. That's
you're in
it.
So much trouble.
Your blood sockets will ignite and your body will literally detach from itself.
Such a whimsical time.
I have 4 degrees in medicine, only three of which are written by me and given to me by me.
Considered good, though.
It's just the same exact thing. What? Am I going to take a degree written with someone else's hand or my own? I trust me. Thanks.
Really, it is a whimsical time. Like, you hear things like this where it's like the idea of trash talk is, and that's why I thought it was so funny. Like, the idea, apparently, I did not express that I thought it was funny enough because you thought I was being serious. But the, I think it's funny when like the trash talk is, I think the Phillies are going to be good this year. The newspaper is like, breaking, Phillies to be good, says cocksure catcher.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned trash talk. We're going to go back to the previous point in history, but I'm going to jump ahead of about a little over a year to July. No, a couple of months, just a couple of months to July 1912, when Bill Kilfer made headlines in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Being a former member of the St. Louis Browns, you know, he was somebody that they knew. And headline on the sports page, Trev, baseball pennant will never fly in St. Louis unless baseball pennant will never fly in St. Louis until climate changes, says Bill Kilfer.
Oh, good news for the Cardinals about the whole global warming thing.
He claimed that until the humidity that he played through in St. Louis lifted, that they weren't going to be able to play through that to the point where they could win a championship.
What?
They just couldn't do it. Couldn't do it.
That is absolutely bizarre.
The sports writer, W.J. O'Connor in St. Louis, sort of mocked the Phillies, saying they paid a fancy price for Killer for last fall. But as far as trash talk goes, Trev, this newspaper referred to our boy, Reindeer Bill, as a, quote, frail piece of bric-a-brac.
Well, wow. How you come back from that?
Strong language. I don't know if you're even allowed to print that in a newspaper or if people would understand it.
Frail piece
if you did
of bric-a-brac.
These
Wait,
days.
What's a bric-a-brac? Mm. Is that considered frail generally? Is it bad that he's bric-a-brac
like
or bad that he's frail?
I think it's two, both. There's a negative connotation on bric-a-brac. I thought we're like, just like, random little tchotchkes that
yeah,
you would see
that's
in like your grandma's house.
Yeah, I mean, but like, would you ever say like he's a fragile tchotchke? I feel like on some level,
I would not say. Yeah, bric-a-brac's official definition is miscellaneous objects and ornaments of little value. So that is an insult. And it's easy to see that meaning something more insulting a couple of decades ago with the word, you know, object of little value being part of the definition.
So, well, I guess like,
that's what they were saying.
So not it's a weak little phrase. But what confuses me about this is like, you say he's frail. So, okay, fine. He can't stay healthy or whatever. Like that's your problem with him. But he's also bric-a-brac, which seems to suggest like if he were to stay healthy, it would be bad because then, you know, he'd have to play on your team and he's bad. Like, wouldn't it be one or the other? Like, oh, I wish he could stay healthy, but he can't. So it's a bad signing. Or this guy is nonsense. Why did you sign him? Not he's bad and he's unhealthy.
I mean, both are things you don't want your players to be.
True.
But also just the idea that St. Louis was like the humidity – the humidity capital of baseball at this point. Like, he may have been joking as well, but I don't know. The way the newspaper responds, like, maybe they are also joking, but, like, how much of this as an entertainment factor is going to really appear in the newspaper?
It's really hard to tell what our jokes in 1912.
In 1912 were really...
Which is really strange. You know, maybe we, just extremely dry humor. We kind of telegraph.
Have you ever considered that that perhaps we are the idiots? No, that's
certainly
impossible.
Not.
Well, I get why they called him frail, because that is that's a terrific insult if this is what they're referring to. Because in April, late April 1912, after the season had started, he his arm dropped dead, according to some reports. Hmm. Just after Labor. Well, no, I'm sorry. This was is the result of repeated injuries to this part of his body. The first time this happened was in April 1912. When he breaks the bone in his hand after he comes out and says, we're going to be a team that's really going to surprise some people. We're going to be a fighting team in the National League. Well, Trev, April 26, 1912, the True Northerner, which is the Paw Paw, Michigan newspaper, which you will not be surprised to learn, was premier coverage provider of Reindeer Bill's career. Like that's their boy.
I knew that.
And to that point, Trevor, there's literally in the May 17th, 1912 edition of the True Northerner, there's a little tidbit story wedged in the back in which the headline just says "Saw Killifer play," and I will read this entire article to you verbatim.
Aw.
H. Merchant was in Chicago the first of the week and saw the ball game on Tuesday between Philadelphia and Chicago. Bill Killifer was behind the bat for Philadelphia, and his playing was a revelation to Mr. Merchant.
The Killifer Times.
That's the entire, yeah, that's all. They're just letting you know that someone from our town saw someone else from our town playing ball.
That is really depressing.
I mean, I get it. Like, people do talk about that. I don't know about you. I don't know if you've noticed this. My hometown in central Pennsylvania, there's been a definite shift, and part of this is a reflection of the media industry as a whole, but there's been a definite shift away from like things on the front page of the sports page being like imported stories from the AP, from the Philadelphia Inquirer about major league professional sports. And now there's things that are about local high schools and
I've
local, like a couple. It's not a big college area, but the colleges that are there get more coverage because they're thinking, I assume, is that like, all right, look, you can go online and get this story about the Phillies for free, but you're not going to be able to get the stuff that's happening here anywhere else. So let's focus on
this. Our website.
And honestly, it's definitely thinned the paper a great deal, and we all know the state of the newspaper industry now in general.
Can you explain it?
Not me. No, you break that open. Let's dig into that. But I think it's good. I think it's much more of a reflection of the local area, the way newspapers used to be, like this, where they're literally reporting that somebody was like, "Hey, you know, I saw Bill play the other night when I was in Chicago. You want to put that in?" And they're like, "Yes." We have two extra
inches.
I like
that was the whole story. It's not even like, you know, yeah, you can have this in here. So like I just got – I won't say what it is, but I just got a piece back that I wrote on freelance with notes. Like, I don't know, like the tone doesn't seem quite right. Can you redo this a little bit? Like, when can you get like a revision to us? And like, that's fine. But I love the idea of sending like some person being like, hey, I got this freelance piece I want to write for you. It involves me seeing a baseball game. And no, I will not describe the baseball game. I'm just going to say who was in it.
I like that they don't even tell you Merchant's first name. They just give you the first initial and assume you know who he is because it's H. Merchant. He runs the dry goods store. You know
it's
him.
It's like a blind item. This son of the town saw Bill Gilliver at a certain the other day in the Chicago area.
Well, in any case, 1912 started very exciting because, you know, the Bill had been with the team for a little while in 1911 when he didn't play too much, but he started in late August. His contract was purchased by the Phillies. He didn't play for them, for in too many games that season. He did appear in an October 3rd game with Grover Cleveland Alexander, and it was the first time they appeared together of their 250 starts.
Yeah, I think you're going to be my best friend.
Same game. I was really feeling the chemistry out there. Thanks a lot, Phil. It's actually Bill. Huh. I'm going to call you Reindeer Bill. And a nickname was born. Well, Trev, the 1912 Phillies, they desperately needed some catchers. And they actually held open auditions for catchers. And they managed to get a couple of guys that shifted through the position. Bill only appeared in 85 games that season. According to Grover Cleveland Alexander, some of them were terrible. Finally, they had to let Killifer try his hand. And when they let him get in there, they never could get him out. Bill Killifer was the greatest catcher I ever worked with or ever saw any other pitcher work with. So they hit it off right away.
Like he just like the pitchers love him.
I like we say Chooch figure in the same way we say Christ figure. You know, that's the high regard that Chooch is held in as far as handling pitching
staffs. Chooch is considered like an archetypal figure in terms of baseball. Everyone knows him.
I totally agree.
Not just
even in 1912. But yeah, like I said, he might have been referred to as frail by the St. Louis newspaper because he got hurt and was hurt often. And he got hurt at the beginning of the 1912 season at the end of April, breaking his right hand. He came back in May, about midway through May, and was almost immediately conked in the ear with a foul ball. And he had to leave the game. So, yeah, he was especially frail, unfortunately, as a young catcher for the Phillies. So after he got hit in the ear by the foul ball, he broke a bone in his right hand again in the same month. And it wasn't until mid-June that he started playing with some regularity. But that might have been why the St. Louis paper sort of mockingly referred to him as a frail piece of bric-a-brac in an unknowably profane use of the newspaper medium. He became known sort of quickly, if not just by Grover Cleveland Alexander, but throughout the league as sort of this like kind of a fresh prototype of catchers. Like they used to want guys who were just sort of like blobs or as the Sporting News said, the time has gone by when the ideal catcher was considered a mountain of beef and bone. Hmm. Like now they wanted guys who were a little slicker,
beef and bone.
Yeah, they ate more dry cereal, handfuls of it, like squirrels, rather than the beavers who were feasting on meat at the time. Because we all remember that's what beavers
that's
were
true.
Doing.
We all do. No need to qualify what you just said.
1910s. No reason to explain that. Please continue.
It's weird to me that it's just weird to me to see the changes that happened before, before we knew about baseball, before we were cognizant, obviously before we were alive. But we know about the history of baseball even in times we weren't alive. Like we know the changes that happened in the 70s. If we weren't cognizant in the 90s, we still know the changes that happened. Like it's not so hard to know, okay, like this is when this offensive thing changed, or this is when people realized that relievers were important, or this is when starters started seeing less time or whatever. I like the early dead ball ones where it's like, yeah, this is when we realized that big fat catchers who aren't in shape aren't good just because the ball can't get by them. We decided not to make our catchers like we make our goalies in street hockey.
Right. It was a catcher doesn't have to have speed to do his job, especially back then when a baseball player's job position by position was probably a lot more or a lot closer to singular. Like you weren't thinking ahead. There wasn't like a textbook explaining the 1 trillion different things a shortstop should be thinking about on any given play. And then that shifts regarding, you know, in regards to the situation. As far as a catcher goes, you didn't need him to be fast, but they were kind of realizing that just because you didn't need a catcher to be fast doesn't mean he couldn't be fast and have good instincts and not be having his third heart attack of the season while behind the plate. So it was a time of where that role was even evolving. And for that reason, Bill Kilifer, Reindeer Bill, became pretty well known as one of the best catchers in the league. Hmm. And the Pawpaw True Northerner was right behind him, keeping track of all of it. Even when I mentioned that article about him breaking his hand that appeared in the True Northerner, and that ended with them talking about like him playing in Philadelphia, and they said Bill in quotes because you know it was technically a nickname, has played a great game thus far this year with Philadelphia and bids fair to be the sensation of the big league. I think they're typist might have skipped a few terms there, but in response to a recent inquiry from Buffalo as to whether it would be possible to get Bill to strengthen that team, manager McGee of the Philadelphia, again, missed a word there, stated in reply that Kilifer could not be purchased for $20,000. That is what they think of him in Philadelphia, all of which is gratifying to his pawpaw friends.
Huh.
That's very nice. They're all just like, oh, we love Bill. He is worth more than like my entire net worth as a person.
He's worth a lot more
to that baseball manager.
You know, we couldn't get him for the Buffalo Kilifers or what. It's so weird. Really
nice. Yes.
Hey guys, it's like they just asked the Philadelphia manager if Bill could play for the local team. Can you imagine?
Can we have that guy?
Imagine
just shouting down from the stands, "Hi, that guy's really good. Can we have him on our team? Not for $20,000. Oh. Holy shit.
Darn.
Yeah, happens a lot.
It's so weird.
Well, in 1913, you know, he the following season, he put up okay numbers. Some of his better numbers offensively. He hit .244 in 120 games, so didn't have any home runs. He only had 4 home runs in his career. 1912, he hit one of them, and then he didn't hit the other 3 until 1916, when apparently he just took an absolute truckload of steroids to muscle those 3 over the fence. In 1913...
Those were just available over the counter then.
Right. He had a cold, so they were like, you want to go to the store and you want to take a bunch of horse muscle relaxers? Yeah.
Ooh,
that's going to...
Best thing for a cold is HGH.
Let's go to stop by the store on your way home and grab me some heroin. I'm feeling a tickle in my throat. Thank you. Yeah. That's 1912. He hit one of his home runs. 1913, he was better across the board offensively and played in 120 games. So, you know, put up some stability, which honestly in that age seems like it was probably a pretty valuable characteristic. Oh, you don't have tuberculosis from your off-season job of sweeping chimneys. That's terrific. Ooh. Why don't you come back and give us 70 games if you're feeling spry? 120? My God.
Jeez, calm
We're
down
gonna
there.
Double your pay.
Yeah, no, it's like
double your pay to $17 a game.
I like that this is also the era where like you would just randomly lose players because another world war broke out. Like, ooh, sorry, we have another senseless loss of young life that we have to get to. Let's make sure that the Phillies lose their next catcher to like the Kaiser.
Imagine all of the subpar Pennsylvania baseball players who see a world war breakout in these eras and think like, now's my chance.
Finally.
If I was ever going to break through with a .224 career batting average at the high school level, now's my time.
Sorry, Willie. Yeah. We love your game, but your narrow ankles make it impossible to sign you when all these big ankled guys are out here. What's that? A war? Oh no.
Oh. Yeah, pick up the phone. What's that? Pearl Harbor? Hang the phone up. You're hired. In any case,
again?
Yeah.
Harbor.
1913 came and went. The Phillies, you know, they did fine. But again, the Sporting News brought up the idea that he was just this new type of catcher, and then the statistics started coming being used more commonly. that actually showed people how many base stealers were being thrown out by catchers and like crediting catchers with getting base runners out. And
it's all a pitcher.
Reindeer Bill. Reindeer Bill. We like to give those stats to the ball, and we use the better balls for the more important games, because the strength of baseball is, of course, the ball. Fans are out there to see the ball. That's why it's in the name of the sport. I'm Kennesaw Mountain Landis. Good night. No, in this case, Bill, Reindeer Bill was, of course, among the league leaders, if not the league leader, in throwing out base runners. And yeah, he certainly did that in 1913 by nailing 130 would-be base stealers. You know, he was considered among the best.
He really is like Carlos Ruiz. Like, he's a good, he loves the pitchers. He's good at getting base runners out. Pitchers love him.
Oh, yeah. The best pitchers on his team love him the most. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, the time went on, and this is when 1914, we enter the era of his Federal League kerfuffle.
Oh, boy.
And in July 1914, the Federal League, the whole thing had gone back and forth already. What had happened was that he was playing in the National League, and then he signed with the Chicago Whales, and then there was such a problem with it that he went back and signed with the Phillies again, and he just wouldn't address it. And you know, he wouldn't, you know, it was just kind of like a squirrely issue that he claimed he hadn't really known what was going on, but like he probably did, and you know, you can't blame a guy for wanting to get paid what he was worth. But in any case, this was seen as there's an ongoing trend that like I feel like maybe we're only recently embracing the idea that like, yeah, players should get paid what they're worth, and it doesn't matter if a team is paying a lot for a guy. Like, it's not our money, and all we're doing is watching millionaires fork over money to the players we want to see. So, but in this case, of course, it was just seen as like a really bad character thing for Bill Kilfer to have done this. And so the Sporting News said he was, quote, due for a spanking for signing with the Federal League.
Such a spicy episode.
And he was expelled from the baseball players' fraternity for his actions, which, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, he's never going to get to the Hall now.
So in July 1914, the Federal League sued. I believe I don't know if they were suing the National League or what, but in any case, his case was sustained, and he was, according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, permanently awarded to organized baseball. So like the Federal League thing was no more. And actually at this point, the Federal League had lost every decision that they had had of this kind. So things were not going great for them, and they wouldn't fold till too much longer.
Yeah, was 1916 they folded, or 1915?
It was right around there. Yeah, it was the mid-teens. They lasted one season, and then the next, a couple of teams switched cities, and then the next season was their last. I believe they didn't even finish the second season. They just kind of tanked.
Rough.
Yeah. So he came back, and you know, all was more or less forgiven. But yeah, that 1913, 1914 came and went. 1915 rolls around. Reindeer Bill and his buddy his buddy Grover Cleveland Alexander were considered a quote superhuman battery.
I love that you can't remember it's Grover Cleveland, even though it's the name of a former president.
In my notes, I keep writing GCA, and the G is just George in my head. I don't know.
If I see GCA, I keep thinking Game Boy Advance.
Which again is not the correct letters that sync up with that, but
that's what you say.
But that's fine. That's fine. But yeah, no. Once again, his injury prone nature reared its ugly head, and in 1915, near the end of the season, in late September, he had to go to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch called a bone setter.
Why is someone still writing about him? Like, really?
This is a former player, man. I don't know. That's it. You latch on to people, and people want to hear about Reindeer Bill, man. He was a hot news item.
Maybe in Pawpaw.
Everybody was interested. Well, they literally say Pawpaw in in quotes there. Pawpaw Bill Kilifer has consulted, quote, Bonesetter Reese. So I don't know if that's a guy whose nickname was Bonesetter or if his job was setting people's bones.
Sounds like a boss from Bloodborne or something.
It does. It sounds like the wrestler Spider-Man fights in that early scene of Spider-Man.
Yeah, classic.
But he asked him to have his take a look at his injured shoulder, and because the Phillies, as you remember, Trevor, were headed to the World Series in 1915.
Oh, goodness,
so yeah. he was hoping to have his shoulder more in place by the time they reached the World Series. But in fact, yeah, he actually didn't show up until the last inning of the last game. The last pitch of the 1915 World Series, he pinch hit for Eparixi, who I know we've talked about on this podcast.
Talked about Eparixi on this podcast
not too long ago either. In the bottom of the ninth inning, and he grounded out to shortstop to end the 1915 World Series. Poor guy, the shoulder was just bad enough to keep him out of baseball until he could end the World Series with a ground out. Poor Reindeer Bill.
Shades of poor old Shane Victorino in 2009.
Yeah.
You ever think about that at night?
Well, I was going to say, you ever think about that, Justin? When the Phillies lost the World Series to the hated New York Yankees?
Ever think about that last at-bat that ripped your heart out? There was no chance they'd come back, but you didn't want to watch it end.
1916, the team was pretty worried about him by that point. He'd gotten, shelled in the arm a whole lot over the past half decade. He wasn't really throwing the ball that hard. They were keeping him, pretty light workouts for Reindeer.
He had a thoracic outlet syndrome. Yeah. Some topical humor for you.
Got you, buddy. he got put on the DL in May, and finally they it's according to the Sabre Bio Project, it was in desperation that the Phillies were like, oh, for God's sake, let's just give him a shot here. And they put him in the lineup in mid-May. And wouldn't you know it, team responded pretty positively to just having him back in the lineup. Yeah. And they apparently, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, started on a rampage that completed their fine road record in spite of their bad beginning. So, yeah, by early June, he and his buddy Grover Cleveland, they'd thrown four shutouts in 3 weeks, and the Phillies were in third place. So
wow,
yeah, it was good
and
times.
They won the World Series,
and obviously, that story doesn't end the way that you just ended it. We'll just given the nature of baseball back then and of Bill, his batting average dropped again. In 1916, he hit .217 in 97 games. 1917, his last year with the Phillies, he hit .274 in 125 games. But at the end of the 1917 season in October, wouldn't you know, the True Northerner published a story saying Bill Kilifer has long been the pride of his pawpaw friends. His judgment and skill behind the bat has won for him the honor of being one of the stars in the national pastime.
It's like written by some sort of like scenery chewing Victorian Englishman.
Yeah, who like for whom English was not their first language, which I don't mean as an insult, but it just kind of reads very choppily.
It kind of reads
there's a word missing in every sentence.
It kind of reads like if you do like a Google Translate if it's Chinese or whatever, you do Google Translate to English and then back to Chinese. Like it sort of reads that way, where it's like, this is so weird. Did an alien write this?
Yeah, it's wacky. Like I generally credit writing being a lot more entertaining from this era, that they just used more entertaining dramatic terms to describe things, and they do. But in some cases, you also wonder, like, huh? So we weren't 100% literate yet
we're
as a society.
I see. We're getting close.
Well, in any case, the story goes on to say Bill's efforts did not succeed in winning a pennant for his team this year, but what is of far greater importance, Trev, he did win a bride, and next Monday, Miss Margaret Thorpe of Westchester, PA will become Mrs. William Kilifer. The ceremony will be performed at the home of the bride in the presence of her immediate family only. So that lets you know that even back then, couples were saying to each other, we could just do this, we just have a quiet, intimate ceremony at home and then throw a party with our friends later. Even then, that was a feasible concept that everyone thought was cool.
I wonder if it was just that they were pretty cheap.
Also, they may have been poor. Yes, that's also very true. But honestly, you know, a couple months, 2 months later in December, the newspapers were running another story saying that, hey, look, you know, we're looking at the numbers again, and Reindeer Killifer is considered once again the best catcher in the National League. Wow. Which, again, this is a guy coming off a season hitting in 1917, he actually hit .274. So he hit better, but that would not be leading the league in modern baseball. Obviously, he had a .609 OPS. And in 1917, he supplied 1.7 WAR behind the plate. He did 1.8 WAR in 1919, but those are far and away the highest amount of wins he provided a team. The drop off after that, he goes down to 0.6 after his 1917 season. So
back then, that you just had to have one guy who was a Hall of Famer and would get you like 12 wins a season, and then a bunch of guys who got one.
Yeah, but back then also the headlines decrying new stats said it's you know, WAR. What is it good for? Saving America.
Yeah, they did like WAR a lot. Not like us.
Trevor, the headline about him being the best catcher appears on a page in which there's also a comic strip called Ain't It a Grand and Glorious Feeling, which is about a man racing to catch a train, realizing he doesn't have money to get on the train, realizing, you know, he's going to have to depend on running into an acquaintance to ask them for money, and then discovering in his pocket he actually has the money after all.
What a grand and glorious feeling.
In conclusion, comedy.
It's like I like the old world. I like 1912 because it any of our stars from today, and by this I mean all, not just baseball stars, but also like comic writing stars. Like, can you imagine how much Ziggy would have killed? Like, Ziggy would have been funny and edgy.
Like, thinking of him back then is like, that's why that comic makes sense. Because it doesn't make sense in this day and age. No. It shouldn't be here. Ziggy shouldn't be alive. And the fact that he is, he's just a man out of time.
It's like,
because it makes so much more sense to see him in old newspapers that. Because it's just not for this age. It's just not for it.
Well, the funny thing, like, it makes me think, like, you know, there are comics that are obviously, like, Crazy Cat is a comic from that era that's near and dear to my heart. And then, like, you know, Little Nemo. Like, there's all sorts of very good comic strips from then that are weird or, like, experimental and stuff. But I think people, much like you were saying, like, you know, we credit old newspapers with just having like more fun language or whatever. I think a lot of people just credit old comic strips with being like super creative and like different. It's like a lot of them were this. A lot of them were like, what if we explain a coincidence or a story that's not quite funny, but it's kind of like dull. Funny to you in the moment.
Right. Yeah. It's something that happened.
A whole comic about it.
Something that happened to the cartoonist recently, who he was like, this is a good idea. And like, doesn't stop to think or consult anyone on the idea. And even if he had, they would have been like,
is it a cartoon?
Yeah. Did you draw it? Then it's done.
I also like, I mean, can you imagine, like, I'm thinking about some of like the sort of like replacement level catchers that are mainly get jobs because backup jobs are, if they have a main job, it's like a Jose Molina sort of situation where it's like, okay, like this person is beyond good at being a defensive catcher. They make up their, you know, they make up their hitting. Can you imagine how much of a star someone like Jeff Mathis would have been in 1912?
Huge star. Like, yeah. And massive. Like,
absolutely. First ballot Hall of Famer.
Just imagine him like out there, all these guys with these loose fitting jerseys that haven't been washed in 4 days because they've been on the road and they're traveling by train and they're traveling like in their jerseys and they're all like, they've all got like pot bellies. And Jeff Mathis is like in good shape and like wearing modern catching gear. You know, and he's like,
are you a spaceman?
Yeah, exactly. He just with futuristic power and like ideas about baseball. He like whip throws a pickoff down to first base after catching a play, and it just just sends the first baseman's glove flying into right field, and the base runner just surrenders. Like, oh, I don't want to be out here.
Yeah. It is really funny. Like, mm-hmm. I wish we could do that. I wish we could somehow like time travel modern day baseballers into the past just to see how hilarious it would be. Like, and not the good ones. That would be boring. Like, of course Aaron Judge would hit a million home runs. Like, who cares? But the, like, the sort of, like, David Eckstein's or even, like, I don't know, like, the guys who are just purely replacement level guys, I would love to see how they do.
Yeah, I think that's worth baseball investing some resources into. Sending bad players back in time so they can feel good about themselves. And we can not witness their achievements, but think about
them.
Read
about them.
Yeah, or we can just go into the newspaper.com archives and be like, wow, I can't believe Jeff Mathis hit 85 home runs in 1912. And that was a down year.
Yeah, they only hit 875 this year. So I guess that's a shame.
You want to talk about superhuman? My God. Well, speaking of fun little tidbits like that, actually. So
please.
Bill Kilifer, he lasted until the second game of a doubleheader on October 2nd, 1917. But then he left the Phillies, finished out his playing career with the Cubs from 1918 to 1921. At 33 years old, he actually inherited coaching duties, and as one newspaper called him a boy manager because he was the youngest by far. He's 33 years old. He was managing the Cubs, and he went on
like Robin.
Yeah, he went on to a managing career 5 years with the Cubs. He finished in second his first year and finished in first his last year in 1925. Then he didn't manage again until 1930. And he didn't.
Seems like an odd time to fire your manager. But he, just me.
He once again finished in first place the last year he was managing the Browns as well. They had actually started 4-10 that year and were in last place for 2 weeks.
Yikes!
But he got fired that year on July 19th. So that explains that.
Okay, fine. Yeah. That makes sense. I was going to say, are all of Bill Kilifer's bosses like Philly.com commenters?
Yeah, I mean,
time to cut bait with Doug.
I have a feeling now that we know that that probably happened to the last time he was fired from a first place team as well.
No, it's just more fun to think that a crazy coincidence happened and he's actually the best manager of all time.
Well, I believe he also coached in the minors and in Cuba. So he got around baseball, I believe 48 years in baseball. And Trevor, you know, one thing I do want to mention, his first ever, baseball game in high school, he faced Larry McPhail, who is the grandfather of current Phillies baseball president of baseball operations, Andy McPhail. Is that not crazy?
It's weird.
He led his high school to a state championship as a junior and then again as a senior, but the game was lost 7-6 due to what everyone, notably Bill, but what was widely accepted to be a crooked umpire's decision. And in college, yeah, so they lose the game 7-6 thanks to Larry McPhail. And in college, he winds up in a game facing Larry McPhail again, who was the batter who'd ended the crooked game. And when Larry McPhail came up to bat, Bill, Reindeer Bill, our boy in 1907, spat tobacco juice into his eye. So Larry McPhail took a called strike to end the game.
Amazing.
That's just the coolest baseball story I've ever heard.
What's really good about that is that they made him take the called strike.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, you know, you never knew which one of these umpires were crooked and which ones weren't.
Like, listen,
yeah,
I don't care if there's tobacco juice in your eye. You should have hit that ball.
Another fun fact, Reindeer Bill and his buddy Grover Cleveland, they were so good together, they never even used hand signals when he was pitching. And Reindeer Bill, you know, a little bit of a stubborn guy. One time a coach tried to get him to change the way he was throwing, and he quit the team.
This guy's amazing. Why don't we know more about
him? Well, we know a little bit more now. And obviously, I always mention my sources before the episode because I always want to make sure people get credit. And there's tons of baseball information out there to sift through.
Nerd.
So I do want to give credit to a lot of what I was talking about I found in old newspaper articles. But I do want to give credit to the Bill Kilifer biography from the Saber Bio Project that was written by Charlie Weatherby, which a bunch of this information came from. It's exhaustively researched and well written, and was part of the reason I realized I could even do this episode. So thank you to Charlie Weatherby, wherever and whoever you are. But yeah, this was the story of Reindeer Bill in our Christmas episode on the Dirty Inning. Trevor, are you going to have a more merry Christmas and happy holiday season now that you know a little bit more about Reindeer Bill Kelleher?
I think I am, actually. I'm going to tell everyone about it, and they're going to get real sick of it.
Yeah, everyone's going to be furious with me with how much of the conversation I monopolize on this topic.
Oh, Justin, stop.
Justin, we haven't seen each other in months. Can you please stop talking about this old baseball player?
I can't stop. Bill Kelleher wouldn't have stopped.
I don't think you guys understand. There was a reindeer age in Northern Europe. Can you imagine how many reindeer there must have been?
I would love if you, like, if that was the thing that stuck with you and just, like, kept you up at night. It's like, honey, come back to bed. No, I need to figure out what happened to these reindeer.
Where did the reindeer go?
Well, there's a whole age and we don't know about it. Who benefits?
These and other questions we hope you'll roll around in your head during the sleepless nights of the holiday season. Folks, we here at the Dirty Inning, and not just the Dirty Inning, but the Good Fight podcast family here, that includes Hitting Season with John Stolness, as well as myself and Liz Rocher, and Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher, wish you an extremely happy holidays, and go impress your family with Reindeer Bill Kelleher for facts that they will be thrilled to learn. And maybe the Phillies will even make a move while we're on our holiday break here. And we'll get to talk about that when we come back. But until then, all we can do is thank you. And, well, we can also suggest that perhaps you go download, like, and subscribe and comment on our podcast. That would also help other people find our podcast so they may enjoy it as much as you have. But
Justin, you mentioned those other podcasts, Continued Success and Hitting Season. I'm a big-time ignoramus and a fool that everyone hates. I haven't listened to them. What are they?
Well, I'm glad you asked, you idiot. Hidden Season is a show in which we discuss topics of the day. You're going to hear a lot of breaking news and the topics that are currently thrilling you about the Philadelphia Phillies, discussed in a roundtable on Sunday nights by myself, Liz Rocher, and John Stolness. And then once a week, John will host a podcast by himself in which he'll talk about midweek Phillies notes and also interview, usually beat writers or people from the Phillies or anyone who has insider information or can provide a perspective beyond his own. And Continued Success, you're going to get a more raw take from me and Liz Rocher as we discuss Phillies and topics across baseball. And we'll also probably dive into some more areas, like we're thinking about doing book or movie reviews or just talking about baseball as it infiltrates all aspects of pop culture and human life in 2018 and 2019. But folks, you're not going to hear from us again until next year. So we do want to wish you a sincere happy holidays and thank you for listening. And we will talk to you next time on the Dirty Inning.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.